In the dead of night, when the moon is high and ill winds blow, and the banshees cry and the moonlight casts an unearthly glow, arise, my love, with tales of woe.
Good evening. It is 12 midnight, the paranormal hour. Welcome to Ghost. I'm your host, Chief Lawson. Ghost is a podcast to discuss all paranormal and parapsychology subjects. You can find Ghost on all major formats, so tell your friends, tell your family. Come listen to Ghost. Welcome to Ghost. Tonight's subject is research and how it benefits an investigation. Tonight, my guests are Jennifer Verne, our research manager on Spirit, and our podcast producer, and Heather Lawson, our trainer and podcast director on Spirit. So, welcome, ladies.
Good evening.
Hello.
Jennifer, how long have you been with Spirit now?
I've been with the team 2 years now, but pretty much the past 30 years in the field of paranormal and the unexplained and the strange have fascinated me.
Funny how that draws you in, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
What made you want to get into research? I know when you joined the team, one of the things you asked me is that you were very interested in becoming part of the research department, and now, you know, you are the research department. What got you interested in doing that?
My grandmother, my dad's mom, has done genealogy on our family tree far, far back. She's got it all out, mapped out, and my dad and my mom helped her. And then they got me roped into genealogy. And I really found that tracking down history and its odds and ends is fascinating. And so that got me into the history and into research. And then once you get into the paranormal field and the weird and the wacky and you try to track down the history involved in that, it even becomes more fascinating and more rabbit holes to jump down.
That's pretty interesting. It is kind of a draw, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It does, and it gets deeper as the rabbit hole goes. When we give you, as part of our investigation, so everybody understands this, when we begin an investigation, we get a case. Once we know we're going to investigate that case, whether it be a live investigation or we're going to research, first thing I do is call you up or email you and say, Jennifer, we got a case, and here's the site information, the address, our research number. What happens once I give you that?
The very first thing is I Google the address, and I look at the Google Earth view so I can actually physically see the property, see what's around it. I want to locate, are there railroad tracks? Are there water, rivers or creeks? Are there any close neighbors nearby? Because if we get a person, I almost said patient, my medical background is coming in. If we get a person that has claims.
It's almost like a patient.
Exactly. It's almost like a patient.
We are
sometimes
treating them. Yeah.
Yeah. So if we get a claim of hearing voices, I want to know how close are the houses next door? Are they near woods? Maybe there aren't any close neighbors nearby that they're overhearing. So I want to rule those kinds of things out. Or not just to rule them out, but keep them in mind when we're thinking about what the claims are.
Mm-hmm.
And if they hear music, are they hearing their neighbors' radios? Can music be accounted for?
Sure.
That sort of thing. So
I bet an aerial map would help with a lot of that. You could see everything all around you.
Yes, and especially with the railroad tracks, because then I'm going to go start searching for rail accidents.
Mm-hmm.
Are there grain silos nearby? Have we had somebody die in an accident in a grain silo that maybe is close by? So I want to kind of get a lay of the land, so to speak, so I can kind of research newspaper articles for that area with those keyword searches, because newspapers.com, it's hard to search unless you know what you're searching for. And then after that, I'm going to Google the property itself, the address, see if anything pops up on that. One case we had, as soon as I Googled the address, newspaper article of a double homicide popped up.
Sure.
So that led me straight to that direction. And then we'll use our real estate subject matter expert to help me get a list of names of the people, because the more you can pare down,
yes,
not so broad, more specific, the easier your searching is going to be. Because if you're so specific, it's too broad, you're going to have way too much. You're not going to be able to narrow down and find out what you want.
Oh, outstanding. All right. Well, now, I got to ask you a question. Because I know you didn't get this opportunity. We went to Michigan Paracon here a couple years ago, and you weren't able to go with us. And I went at the time, and I attended a class that Amy Bruni had put on research. Because she used to do a lot of research with TAPS when she was a member there, and she does a lot of research as part of Kindred Souls. So I have to ask you, what kind of websites and what kind of resources, you know, do you use to gather this information?
We do have a lot of websites that we do utilize at the beginning, but I have really kind of pared those down to two major websites.
Mm-hmm.
Newspapers.com is where I go first, and then I will go to Ancestry.com.
Mm-hmm.
That was a bizarre noise. Oh, that was
that was czar.
Yeah. I was like, what was that growl?
Yeah.
So Ancestry.com and Newspapers.com are the two main sites I use. There is Find a Grave,
mm-hmm,
that you can also utilize. That one is a little bit more difficult to utilize, but it is also linked to Ancestry.com now. So
yes,
I find that...
Well, I didn't know that.
Yes, if I'm on okay. Ancestry.com, it takes me to Find a Grave.
Ah.
So the gravestones and...
Newspapers.com is also linked to Ancestry.com.
They are. Yes. Yes.
Ah.
Are. Mm-hmm.
Somebody spent their time there, yeah.
Yes. So those are pretty much the two sites that I will browse through to get names and dates and events and things like that. But censuses are only good up to 70 years. So I think just recently they unlocked another decade.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's protected up to a certain time.
Yeah. So I can't get past, I think, 1950 at this point.
Yes.
Okay.
So I'm kind of limited in that, which is why the real estate subject matter expert is really helpful, because if I can get a listing of the past residents, then I can Google those names in newspapers and find obituaries and things like that. More connected to a name. Again, more specific I can get the search, the mm-hmm better results I'm going to be able to get. And sometimes we can't find anything.
Wow. Okay. Chief Lawson here, your host of Ghost to Ghost. We'd like to take this opportunity to take a quick break. We'll be right back with you. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Real quickly, I want to put a shout out for anybody who's ever wanted to be a paranormal investigator. Spirit is now taking applications. We are specifically looking for a social media manager. And the duties would be moderating the Facebook page and the Instagram page, as well as helping out with Ghost to Ghost. We're also looking for a PR manager to help advertise Spirit, help book events for Spirit. And we're also looking for a real estate agent for a subject matter expert. Although we would consider, if you want to become part of the team, we would certainly look at that. And of course, we're always looking for people. But if you are interested in becoming a member, go to our website, www.spiritindiana.com. Go to Become a Member. Read over. Make sure you understand the process and what's required. And then there's a link there where you can email us to get an application to start in the process. So we'd love to hear from you. If you're interested in being part of us and you think you've got what it takes to be part of Spirit, reach out to us. Again, that's our website at www.spiritindiana.com. And you go to Become a Member. Thank you so much. Well, Jennifer, let me ask you this. Why is research, in your opinion, important to an investigation?
Well, I think one of the main reasons it's important is the fact of myth and legend. You know, ghost stories revolve around myth and legend, and over the years, it just compounds and compounds and gets bigger and bigger. And so mm-hmm the more research you can do, the more you can rule out certain facts of a story and say, you know what, that fact actually is not valid. So that can't be the source, but that doesn't mean that the source is not there. It just means that it is not part of that story.
Yeah.
That there is another story underneath and behind it. And so that's why research is important and comes into play, because then you can really separate truth from fiction.
Yes.
And then you can maybe have a better investigation with more accurate information.
Well, and, you know, the one research case we did for a long time, there was a belief that, and this was put on numerous websites, and they didn't know any better at the time, but there was a story about a at the City County building, about a individual that had been arrested, and he was under witness protection. The mob wanted him, and they transport him from the basement up to the courtroom. And when they put him in the elevator, two people dressed as police officers who were mob related had shot and killed him. That the bullet hole was still in the elevator, and this because the fact of the elevator, they shut it down for one reason or another, and then they walled it off on all floors. And you could still hear the rumor was the folklore that you could hear the elevator running. As we started doing research, come to find out, yeah, the elevator might have been there, but we don't know. We know it's an empty shaft. We know they use it for wiring and different things and piping, but it turns out none of that ever happened. There was no court case, and we even talked to one of our own as a police officer with Metro, and he found out that another officer had invented the story and put it out there for effect, and these sites had picked up on it. So research showed us that was not truthful. And I mean, there's a lot of times, I remember the very first investigation this group ever ran was Charles F. Frank Lodge in 2002. And it was a Masonic Lodge in Zionsville, Indiana. And something that I'm leading to with this is we ended up going in, and all these guys, all these brothers come and go, well, this has happened. We all think it's this one guy, Masonhead. Masonhead was the guy's name. And we're sure that's who it was. And by the way, I've talked to some people since then. But anyway, we were pretty sure that that's who it was. And we kind of developed, we were in the early parts of the group, and we developed what is now known as confirmation bias and or research bias. You want to talk a little bit about that?
So yeah, confirmation bias is definitely plays a part, because if you think you're speaking to somebody and you're asking questions and you're using a different name, you're going to get responses and activity that you think are yeses, but they aren't really yeses. They aren't really the true story. And so you're going in, and almost like when we talked about the tulpas yesterday or last yes. episode, you're creating the activity
sure.
with the story that you have.
Yes.
Instead of actually knowing the real story to try to get the real evidence.
Well, there again, it goes to show you. I mean, you know, and we do the research, or when Jennifer does the research and we bring it into the group, one thing that we will say right off the bat is that, you know, this is what happened. But I always tell everybody, keep an open mind. You know, this may not be what's causing the anomalies or the haunting at that location. We've had that, like, there again, you know, proved to be wrong. It turned out wasn't Masonhead causing all the issues. And, you know, but we went in and we kept trying to direct questions to him, and we kept reaching out, and that wasn't who we were getting. So,
right.
You know, it does happen. So, well, ladies and gentlemen, research, I can't say enough good things about. Research is not easy either. Jennifer does a wonderful job. She's been with us quite some time now. And you know, there's a lot into research. I mean, there's layers and layers. I hate to act like Shrek and an onion, but it is. I mean, there's a lot of layers.
Yeah, and the story just evolves and changes, just like a game of telephone.
Yes.
A really good example for the state of Indiana is the Diana of the Dunes story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I heard about it growing up, but I didn't know about the story. I just knew that there was a ghost walking the dunes of northern Indiana, right there, Lake Michigan.
Yes.
So I went and I took a little deeper dive into Diana of the Dunes.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I have found out. So I'm going to give just a little bit of a history here on Diana.
Okay.
So in 1915, Lake Michigan fishermen had started seeing a naked woman swimming in the waters off the dunes, running naked along the shores, living like a recluse, and living in a shack on the beach. Newspaper stories from that time expounded on these tales and claimed that there was a mermaid vision. And they gave this mermaid vision the name Diana of the Dunes, after the Roman goddess of the hunt. So as with any tale that seems salacious for the times, which in the 1915s, 1920s, would have been very salacious to have a woman running around unclothed, right?
Oh, yes.
So these truths become exaggerated and expanded and changed over the intervening decades, and then the legend grows, and then the myth grows from that legend. So what we actually know is myth. Her name, Diana.
Mm-hmm.
She's a tall, lithe, fair-skinned young woman with flowing long black hair.
Mm-hmm.
She's a recluse. Some stories say that she had two daughters. And shortly after the second daughter, her husband, Paul, beat her, causing her death.
Mm-hmm.
With Paul fleeing and the daughters taken into protective custody, and that she was buried in a pauper's grave. and that she was the daughter of a high-born, wealthy Chicago physician. So that's the legend.
Mm-hmm.
And then after her death, people started seeing her ghost doing the same.
Yes.
Walking the dunes, swimming naked in the water, mm-hmm. disappearing, right?
Yes.
So this is where the research comes into the story. The real story and the idea of the spirit is... hang on a second. I just lost my place a second, guys.
That's all right.
So the idea of Diane of the Dunes was this... a young, repressed girl who wanted to escape her restrictive station in life, and that she was in an abusive marriage and was bullied and beaten by her husband. So why wouldn't that type of figure want to come back and haunt the dunes into a sure. place where she loved and could be free
gave again? A reason.
Gave a reason for her to be free again. So what we do really know, her name was Alice Mabel Gray, and she was born in March 25th, 1881. She was born to a middle-class family, a Chicago laborer, lamplighter. So the cool thing...
Now, there's something you don't hear very often.
That's right. So the really cool thing, and I'm going to flip some pages here because I want to get to her genealogy.
I got to say this real quick. My dad loved... They actually made a song. They made 7 different revisions of it called The Old Lamplighter. And for people that don't know what that was, when they had gas lamps in cities, and that was the first form of lighting before you had electricity, these guys, what they were hired to do is every night they would go around at dusk and they'd light these lamps. And every day at dawn, their job was to go through and snuff them out and turn the gas off. And that was their job every day. That's what they did.
Well, before gas, it was candles.
Yeah, before gas, it was candles.
Yes,
so, yeah.
And they would light the candles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And replace lamps. Them and so forth.
Right,
so.
Right, exactly. So this is where the genealogy comes into. And again, mm-hmm. genealogy history, my kind of rabbit hole. And I did fall down into a rabbit hole with Alice's dad. So he was Ambrose Gray, and he was born in Fairfield, Connecticut. But when he was 8... they all moved out to a farm, and then he left home early and apprenticed with a jeweler in Brown County, Indiana. Huh. And then from there, he worked as an eyeglass maker, volunteered in the Civil War, was discharged, and he married Sally Gray. No relation, just happened to have the same last name.
Wow.
And their first 3 children, Lenora, Nanny, and Hugh, were born in Bean Blossom, Indiana.
Wow.
And then the family moved up to Chicago, and that's where Alice Mabel was born in Chicago.
Wow.
But she didn't get to the dunes until she was 34 years old.
Wow.
She went off to the dunes. She lived a normal life. She went to school. She was not a recluse. She was extremely, extremely smart. She was a small woman, mm-hmm. stocky build. She had a short 1920s haircut.
Ah, okay.
She was tan-skinned because she was outdoors a lot.
Oh, yeah.
So she was not tall. She was not young. She was not lithe. She was
nothing near
fair-skinned,
the base, yeah.
Nothing near the story. She was very well-educated, like I said. She studied astronomy, math, languages, ecology. She even went over to Germany and studied in Germany and spoke
wow.
German. And when she was living at the dunes, she decided that she was tired of living in Chicago. And I'm gone off my notes here because I know the story so well by now.
Mm-hmm.
She was tired of living in Chicago, having a paycheck, working day in and day out for a
yes.
meager living. She didn't want to do that anymore. She didn't want to be a slave to the economy, as what was her words.
Yes.
So she decided to spend a winter in the dunes by herself. So that's kind of where the recluse I came from.
Ah.
But she went into the town of Miller. I think that was the Miller Library
mm-hmm.
to read voraciously. Read anything and everything she could because she was determined to save the dunes because at that time it was not even a state park.
Wow.
It was just a dunes area and developers and industry were coming in and they actually strip mined one of the dunes for minerals and they lost one of the biggest dunes there in the park.
Yes.
And she was determined she was going to stop that.
Mm-hmm.
So she used her education and her knowledge to help get the state park established. And the state
wow.
park was actually established finally in 1925, shortly after her death, I believe, because she did eventually die in 1925. But she used her fame as Diana of the Dunes
wow.
to help push that conservation message that she had.
Yes.
So she was extremely tied to the dunes. And It did eventually become a national park. Wow. In 2019.
Yes.
It finally became a national park. But it had been a state park, since 1925.
Yeah.
She was a very free spirit. She wanted to live on her own. There's where I lost my place, huh?
Yeah.
So she did find a husband. And I put that in air quotes. You can't see it over the podcast. But they went off to Tennessee to get married.
Uh-huh.
Nobody can find her marriage certificate at all. So we can't confirm that they were officially married, but they lived as husband and wife. But they never had any kids.
Mm-hmm.
Paul was her polar opposite. He was not educated. He did have anger issues, but he adored Alice.
Yes.
Just absolutely adored Alice. She kept him even keeled. Now, once she did pass away, he did get remarried, and he did have two daughters.
Uh-huh.
So there's where that part of the fake story comes in. Paul did have two daughters, but not with Alice. She actually died on February the 8th, 1925, from uremia, which is kidney failure.
Yes.
She more than likely probably had it for a while.
Yeah.
And it just finally...
And just didn't want to see the doctors or whatever. We don't know, but...
Yeah. Couldn't afford it or whatever the case be. Yeah.
Right. But she was not buried in a pauper's grave. She was buried in the family plot. Her extended family did pay for a burial, but they did not pay for a gravestone. They did not give her a headstone. But she is in the Oak Hill Cemetery in Gary, Indiana. And eventually in the 1990s, people for the preservation of Diane and Diana of the Dunes bought her a headstone. And it says, Alice Mabel Wilson, which is Paul Wilson's name. So they made her
gave her
Paul's name. So now that we have that research done, you have a better backdrop of who Diane of the Dunes is.
Sure.
And we can view the haunting claims in that light. So when you see accounts of a woman seen roaming the dunes and walking in the surf in the shadows or even swimming in the water and then just melting away, you can see why Alice Mabel Gray would still want to be there in the place that she loved. So much of her life and her passion and her spirit are in those grains of sand.
Oh, yeah. And that would explain a lot of things. If you're looking at the haunting, you know...
Kind of a protector.
Yeah,
definitely
exactly.
A protector.
You know, you could go off the dedication she had to the dunes. And I mean, there again, there's where research makes a difference. It helps if we're starting to look for that. If we're actually looking for her, not just randomly trying to figure out who's there. It makes a big difference.
It does, because rather than having a young teenage girl who's just roaming the dunes for no reason, you have an educated, passionate woman who loved that place and then wants
to
stay there.
And I'll be honest with you, since you've been on the team, you've done a fabulous job. I can't say enough good things about all the work you've done, and this is a very good example of it. And people don't realize how important that is. When you put a team together, I see so many of these people that start a team, okay? And I've been there. I mean, we all were there. I was there in 2002. We started this team up, and you know, it was a lot of ifs and ands, and like everybody else, you know, we went off of what we saw on TV because that's all that was there. There was a handful of shows. I think Taps was out there, and Most Haunted, which was a BBC English broadcast, and you know, what we read from Hans Hosler, and so when we put this team together, you know, it was a very important part. You picked up, you run very, very well with it when you've got research, and I mean, you've done really well. I can't say enough good things. You're definitely an important part of the group, and this is an important part of an investigation. I mean, it shows that. So, well, folks, that's all I have for this evening. I'd like to say on behalf of Spirit and Ghost to Ghost, thank you for listening. Again, our podcast is aired every 15th and 30th. Please make sure you tune in on all the normal formats. So from Jennifer...
Thank you, guys.
And Heather?
Thank you.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Chief Lawson here, your host of Ghost to Ghost. We're going to take a quick break for this commercial message. And today's episode is sponsored by MBU Services, General Contracting and Restoration Services. Serving all your general contracting restoration needs, whether it's updating a bathroom or renovating a rental property or recovering after a flood. Here's the number you need, 317-832-3921. Again, 317-832-3921. And you will be able to find them at www.mbuservices.com. Again, www.mbuservices.com. And on Facebook at MBU Services. Again, thank you very much for listening to Ghost to Ghost. All right, listeners, welcome to Ghost Story of the Day. Today's presenter will be Jennifer Verne, our research manager on spirit.
Today's Ghost Story of the Day, The Legend of Pearl Bryan. In 1892, Pearl Bryan was a 22-year-old from Greencastle, Indiana. On January 28th of that year, she was to take a trip into Indianapolis to visit a friend. However, on February 1st, her headless body was discovered in Fort Thomas, Kentucky. She was 5 months pregnant. A dental student in Ohio, Scott Jackson, and his friend and fellow classmate, Alonzo Walling, were tried, convicted, and hanged for the murder. It was revealed at trial that Jackson and Bryan had had a secret romance for some time, and her pregnancy was probably a motive for the crime. Her headless body was returned and buried in the family plot in Greencastle, but her head was never found, and the murderers gave several stories as to what they did with it. This has led to several area ghost stories that have persisted throughout the ages in Mooresville, Indiana. Many report seeing a white, headless will-o'-the-wisp appear in marshy areas near State Road 267, just at a sharp turn after the crossing over a little stream. On dark, foggy, rainy nights, a headless woman can be seen to appear in the middle of the road, shrieking and screaming. The road, over the years, was widened and straightened, but this has not stopped the stories of Pearl Bryan. Her murder has even been attached to Bobby Mackey's in Kentucky, and claims that Jackson threw Pearl's decapitated head down the well near the future site of this infamous bar. Pearl was a young woman who placed her heart in the hands of the wrong man, and if some would be believed, she wanders lone, cold nights, waiting and weeping in despair.
Thanks for listening to Ghost. Again, I'm your host, Chief Lawson. You can find Ghost to Ghost on all major formats on the 15th and 30th of the month at midnight. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, maybe have a question or subject you'd like to ask about on air, or be used on the show, please email us at ghosttoghost@spiritindiana.com, ghosttoghost@spiritindiana.com. I want to thank my production staff on Spirit, Jennifer Verne, our research manager and our producer, and Heather Lawson, our trainer on Spirit and our podcast director, for helping make these podcasts possible. My chief of staff, Andrew Books, for his guidance and help on the scripts, and everyone else involved. Thank you so much. See you next time. Until then, stay safe and remember the truth is out there. Good night. Ghost to Ghost podcast and its contents is the property of Spirit Paranormal LTD, all rights reserved. We welcome you to download and play the podcast and share with others for personal use. You may not, except with written permission, use or distribute its contents for commercial use. Spirit Indiana Paranormal, covering the Hoosier State since 2002, Indy's oldest parapsychology investigation group. If you're experiencing what you believe to be paranormal issues, reach out to us for help at www.spiritindiana.com or call our hotline at 317-883-9103. Again, that is www.spiritindiana.com or our hotline at 317-883-9103. Thank you for listening. Take care of yourself and the ones you love, and be safe out there.